I learnt to cycle in the late 1960s by riding a tricycle. The sort of thing you might see today in a museum of childhood. It had a steel container on the back, like a sky blue bread bin. There might be a bottle of pop rolling around in there, so I could refresh myself at the end of my journey, which occurred when I got to the end of our drive. Children today learn to ride on small wooden bikes, which have two wheels but no pedals, so they sort of walk them along, like the earliest Victorian velocipedes, known as dandy horses. You see them skimming along pavements 50 yards ahead of their parents. I can't relax with one of these performing fleas in sight. Only the parents seem able to do that. Well, that's how things are in North London, where I currently live. But I learnt to ride a bike in York, where I grew up, and where the phenomenon of utility cycling was observable. In these essays on the social history of cycling, we're going to be hearing quite a bit about utility cycling, which is cycling for transportational rather than lifestyle reasons. I think of it as everyday, normal cycling, and Cycling UK, the cycling charity, would like to revive it. Utility cycling is the reason 14.7 billion miles were cycled in Britain in 1949. In 2019, however, only 3.45 billion miles were cycled. In 2020, that figure went up to 5.03 billion. But 2020 was a freak year, in cycling stats and much else, because of the pandemic. We hear talk of a cycling boom, and there has been a modest increase in cycle mileage since 1993, but the long-term story is one of precipitous decline because of car use. In my formative cycling years, the decline was underway nationally, including in York, even though York was a city ideally suited to cycling, being flat and with large industrial workforces. When the British Rail carriage works knocked off at 5 p.m, it was like the start of the Grand National, with people wobbling away from the gates on a variety of bikes, ridden quite unselfconsciously, which was just as well, given sagging chains, buckled wheels, busted saddles swathed in plastic bags. Everybody rode a bike, just as everybody in a Western rides a horse, and with the same casualness. If in a hurry to speak to someone, we might dismount from our steeds before they'd stopped moving, the conversation already underway, as the bike pursued its short, uncontrolled afterlife, bouncing off a lamppost and slumping into a hedge. Everybody could ride with no hands. I could, and did, ride legs akimbo, with a friend sitting side-saddle on the crossbar, which was called, in Yorkshire, giving a croggy. I could also push a second, riderless bike alongside me as I rode, and I still do that in London, perhaps when taking one of my son's bikes off to the repairers, where it attracts admiring glances. Indeed, I've been photographed doing it. You'd think I was performing a circus act, but it's only utility cycling. Back to cycling history. Those primitive velocipedes went from having no pedals to pedals that drive a wheel directly. And the bigger the wheel, the greater the momentum, hence the penny farthing, which was known as the ordinary, whereas the extraordinary would have been a better term. Ordinaries were dangerous, which is why John Kemp Starley's innovation of 1885, a bike with a chain drive and two wheels of the same reasonably proportioned size, was known as a safety bicycle. Starley made cycling open to all, on cycles truly meriting the description ordinary, but which were known as roadsters. I must have had 20 roadsters between the ages of 6 and 18. It was easy come, easy go with York bikes. If I did lock one up, it would be with the skimpiest chain, like the thing Sid Vicious used to wear round his neck. So you had to expect a high wastage to thieves and frequent resorts to the Cycles for Sale and Wanted columns, which took up most of an inside page of the Yorkshire Evening Press, just as Horses for Sale had taken up most of the front page of the press's 18th-century predecessor, the York Courant. There was recycling of cycles in York at the regular police auctions, where recovered stolen bikes were sold off, and the police sold their own old bikes, massive, heavy black cart horses. But it seems the police in London today have forsworn all those characteristics, because I see them on white Bromptons, folding bikes. Why would a policeman need a folding bike? To take it on a train, perhaps. Handy, if you're pursuing a suspect who also has a folding bicycle. What are today called trouser bands, I called bike clips, and they were very necessary, given the width of my flares. What is now called lube, I called oil, because that's what it was. I'm not sure if I called lights lamps, but the front lights of those days were lamp-like, the direct descendants of carriage lamps. There'd be no question of fitting one into a pocket, or of getting it out again if you did manage to cram it in. The only bikes I had that were not roadsters were a couple of what were then called racers, and which are now called road bikes. I got my first racer as a Christmas present when I was 12. For weeks beforehand, I knew the bike I was going to get, a rally in a beguiling metallic green. It was hanging from a certain beam in Russell's bike shop in central York. That shop is now a restaurant, and today when I pass it I can see exactly where the bike was hanging, and my heart beats faster. I failed my cycling proficiency test on that machine, which came as no surprise, since I'd recently failed my 11+. The cycling proficiency scheme, an initiative of the Department of Transport with the involvement, ominously enough, of the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents, declined in the late 70s through lack of funding. But in the schools of early 70s York, everyone took it. My failure was particularly humiliating because everyone else I knew who took the test achieved one of two possible outcomes. They scored 99% or 100%. In which case they received their certificate with a handshake from the headmaster. I failed it, I think, because owing to some Kafkaesque glitch, I spent every one of the 5 after-school evenings when I trained for the test doing the same exercise over and over again, turning right at a junction, which is, admittedly, the key cycling skill from the point of view of staying alive. Today, the cycling proficiency test has given way to the more amiable bikeability scheme, run by a charity for the Department of Transport. The course is undertaken by 500,000 people, mainly children, every year, and the numbers are growing. Of course, there is no question of failing bikeability. Sometimes your child may not meet the required safety standard to progress to the next level. This doesn't mean they have failed. They just need some more time and support. Unless this should appear too severe, a chummy exclamation mark follows. I have generally had racers or road bikes in my adult cycling career, which has continued in London. I cycle every day and still identify as a utility cyclist. I refuse to fetishise or pamper my bike. When I visit people, I decline offers to bring the bike into the house. I do not have a second lock for the back wheel. I do not wear special clothes to cycle in, except, usually, a helmet. My York friends express surprise that I am so reckless as to cycle in London, but today London is more of a cycling city than York. York has been too civilised for its own good. In the pedestrianised centre, bikes are banned. It has also been uncivilised in a manner more characteristic of the whole country, with its out-of-town, reachable-only-by-car shopping centres. Whereas London is threaded through with cycle lanes. A Ken Livingstone initiative motivated by the prospect of gridlock on the roads and saturation point on the tube. The bike lanes and the bike hire scheme caused London cycling in the early 2000s to increase at the fastest rate ever seen in the UK. Today, York is joint 18th with Lincoln in the list of the top 20 cycling places. Cambridge is top, but there are 9 London boroughs in that top 20. Duncan Dollimore, campaign director of Cycling UK, tells me that 70% of the traffic over Blackfriars Bridge in a rush hour is bikes, and people are not there for fun. So this is utility cycling. But there's also a lot of lifestyle cycling in London. The only term to describe the most visible of the London biking subcults is a satirical one, mammals, middle-aged men in lycra. They incessantly circle Regent's Park, and my route home from the West End involves tangling with them, or rather being overtaken by them. Whereas my bike is largely silent, but with the occasional clank, their high-performance road bikes whir, or buzz, like bluebottles or hornets. And the insectoid impression is compounded by their severely geometric helmets and the bug-eyed effect of their cycling sunglasses. They're usually talking as they overtake me, being on what they call their chat laps, which adds insult to injury. Their road bikes are modern, whereas mine is a Dawes Lightning from the mid-1980s. The Lightning is the wrong Dawes, a bike shop owner once told me, although that might have been tactical, since I'd just invited him to make me an offer for it. The Dawes Lightning has never had much of a spring in its step, apparently. Missing from the frame is the magic number 531, which refers to the ratio of different metals in the manganese molybdenum steel alloy that the tubes of the better road bikes are drawn from. Even so, I think my Dawes satisfies the criteria for Eroica events, the British version of the retro cycling festival that first took place in Tuscany in 1997. Clipless pedals, steel frame, unintegrated gear and brakes, exposed brake cables. It's telling of my casual approach that I don't know how much my bike weighs, probably about 13 kilograms. A competitive Eroica machine would be more like 10. As a utility cyclist, I regarded those arrivistes, the COVID lockdown cyclists, with scepticism, because they were cycling for leisure. They weren't cycling to work, since nobody was going to work. I speak of them in the past tense. It's too early to say whether the bike boom of COVID will be sustained. The stats aren't in. But I did have one thing in common with the COVID riders. They were escaping lockdown, and I've always associated cycling with a sense of freedom. It's down to the sheer manoeuvrability of a bike. Bella Bathurst put it nicely in The Bicycle Book. She cycles, she wrote, for the constant delight in going straight to the front of the queue.